we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart. Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a clipping from the South Bucks Cyclist Touring Club magazine, The Beech Leaf, read by Peter Donaldson.
The upmarket restaurant in Tame, formerly known as Thatcher's, has been renamed The Old Trout.
Thanks to Professor Arthur Brown of London for that. Now let's meet the teams. Welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Jeremy Hardy. Challenging them on my left, Alan Corran and Fred McCauley. Francis, which Auburn endeavour led to glowing red faces at the Scottish office?
Glowing red faces? Is this Donald Dewar?
Yes.
Dounreay, the Bideawee reprocessing plant. It's not so much a reprocessing plant, it's more of a rest home for dangerous nuclear material. And Reagan has told our government that we've got to take this, and they're...
Reagan?
What's his name?
Who's Martin the new one?
Eisenhower,
that's right. Him. Jimmy Eisenhower, the peanut king. He's told our Prime Minister Asquith that we've got to have this nuclear waste and Dounreay, because the sea air will do it good. It's not all nuclear waste. Some of it's just enriched uranium, which has got lots of vitamins and is very good for you.
I hate to say this with Fred sitting next to me. Indeed, I hate to say it at all, given the letters will come in. But I saw that if it weren't shipped out, it would fall into the hands of a politically unstable, volatile and aggressive country. And they sent it to Scotland.
I think you'll find it's our oil.
News of Operation Auburn Endeavour, a secret shipment of enriched uranium from Georgia to Dounreay, was leaked this week to the New York Times. 2 points to Jeremy, and it's your question as well. Who wants children to switch off their television sets and go and do something much more boring instead?
Oh, this is blunkered. I wish the government would just legislate rather than bring out guidelines. I'm sick of this approach where every day they say, "Hello, public, this is your government speaking, and here's today's handy advice. Eating cucumber quickly can give you wind, but don't worry, charcoal tablets can free up that trapped gas." And the latest thing is on homework, because they're trying to take examples from private education and haven't noticed that the main difference is that private schools, enormous amounts of money are spent on it. But they want it to be more like private schools and have lots of homework, which means that you have to sort of sit with your child every bloody evening and try and supervise. And I can't do long division anyway. And he wants four-year-olds to do 20... I mean, four-year-olds are lucky if they get through the day without wetting themselves.
I don't know about anybody. I mean, I'm a parent. I've got kids who ask me...
That would make you a parent.
They asked me to help out with homework, and it reminds me when I was a boy having trouble with Pythagoras' theorem and saying to my dad, "Could he help me?" And he said, "No, it's all changed since I was at school."
Experts have pointed out that many teenagers already spend evenings beavering away at subjects such as computer studies, mechanics and applied chemistry, or video games, car stealing and glue sniffing, as we usually call them. 2 points to Jeremy. Fred, who had a bone to pick with Jack Cunningham?
It's about beef and the bone, because a Scottish hotelier had served beef and the bone and was taken to court, and the case collapsed because somebody had taken the spine out of it. But the problem was in the interpretation of the word preparation for the beef, because apparently the preparation could be extended to actually, you know, slaughtering the beast, and indeed rearing of cows. Could be interpreted as preparation. And rearing of cows is, in fact, still illegal in many counties in England, but actively encouraged in others.
A sheriff's court in Selkirk threw out charges against hotelier Jim Sutherland for flouting the beef on the bone. Bam! Despite being branded manifestly absurd by the court, Jack Cunningham insisted that the ban would remain in force, proving once and for all that pig-headed intransigence can be passed from government to government. Alan, a piece of music for you. Uncle Sam by Madness. Alan, who's asked us to jack in the union?
I don't know this story. There must be the Americans.
Hmm.
And it would be Clinton. It's another deal that Blair has done, is it, in return
nope.
for...
I think Francis knows the answer, didn't
he? Yes, it's Newt Gingrich.
It is.
A terrible Newty is born, as W.B. Yeats wrote. And he has told us to abandon all this Europe rubbish and join NAFTA, I think, the North American Free Trade Agreement, because he says we're much closer to America than we ever will be to Europe. Showing that grasp of geography, which I didn't used to be a geographer.
The Speaker of the US House of Representatives, Newt Gingrich, asked Britain to leave the EU and join the North America Free Trade Agreement. He argued that Britain has much more in common with the US than it does with Europe. However, a spokesman for Brussels said that not only did Europe turn up for both world wars in time, but Germany made an extra special effort on both occasions. The scores at the end of round one are... Alan and Fred with 2 points, but Francis and Jeremy in an early lead with 6 points. And we start round two with an item from the Daily Telegraph.
About 150,000 Sesame Street talking T-shirts are being withdrawn in America after complaints that the Cookie Monster utters an obscenity. It is supposed to say, "It's time to truck."
Thanks to Peter Jones of Wickham for that. Francis, whose floral arrangements had people flocking to his home?
It's Derry Irvin again, isn't it? He invited the press round to inspect his fixtures and fittings. Well, most of them. They looked at the flock wallpaper and his bed. They all bounced on his bed. But there was a guard stationed outside the loo, so they couldn't inspect his £3,000 throne. And it's not entirely clear what horrible secret lurks in his lavatory. That he doesn't want people to know about. I mean, maybe one of those artworks he's borrowed, rather partial to a constable in the loo, like George Michael. Sorry.
Do you not get the impression it was like your old great-auntie's house? I mean, it was all really dull. I imagine if you went round to visit, you'd get warm lemonade, and there'd be no games to play. You'd just get a deck of cards with 6 cards missing.
But it was really like the thing about not being told not to think about elephants, and you can only think about elephants. None of us could think about anything except this lavatory with a man in it who wears stockings and silk breeches, and how he actually and what he wears over the top of either, and how he gets things down. And I'm totally preoccupied with the lavatory, weren't you? And they ought to have shown it and nailed the canard, which is probably what he does in there.
Does he have flock lavatory paper?
No, check that out. It was Boots. No, it's lavatory paper, but it came from Boots.
No.
I know that one.
Jeremy, whose long-running relationship has The Sun finally set upon?
The Sun must be a reference to Rupert Murdoch.
It is.
Whose wife has left him. And I wouldn't, as a rule, be interested in the marital dysfunctions of the rich and famous. But in the case of Rupert Murdoch, I say, ha, 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 you muckraking bastard, serves you right.
No, I think I'll find my employer's wife was entirely to blame in this.
It was a story. I mean, it made it to the front page of The Guardian, and it was in just about every other paper this week, but somehow The Sun missed it completely. Although, you know, it all came to light because Rupert Murdoch and his wife had a fight, which we can see for £9.50 next Saturday.
Under American law, Anna will be entitled to half of everything in Rupert's pockets. But how they'll divide up the current Labour government is anyone's guess. Fred, your piece of music.
I put a nickel in the telephone, dial my baby's number, got a busy line. Each time I tried, I got a busy tone, not my baby's number, just a busy line.
Fred, whose direct line was a French farce right from the kickoff?
Oh, this is a tough one. This is a story that was covered equally in Scotland as it was in England, I would guess. And in fact, there was a great degree of absenteeism from work this week as Scottish blokes were found to be suffering from sore finger. This was the French World Cup authorities who had a number of tickets to sell. In fact, the number was 110,000, and there were 10 million phone calls, and very few of them got through, which became clear the day after when they showed a picture of the busy office. in France, which was really just a phone and a French guy called Guy, who just sat there with a fag and answered the phone when he could be arsed.
The line had 250,000 unanswered calls in the first 5 minutes, breaking a record previously held by British Gas. 76-year-old woman in Southend, whose number was almost identical to the French one, was bombarded with calls from 7 a.m. until BT cut off her line 2 hours later, but not before she'd sold 2 million tickets for Brazil v. Basildon. The EU says they're now going to impose the harshest possible penalties on the French officials responsible for the disaster. They'll be forced to watch all Scotland's games.
If the penalties are harsh, I just hope Gary McAllister doesn't take them.
Alan, who's playing his own Requiem because of his Abbey habit?
Is it this bloke Leary, is it?
Neary.
Neary. Yeah. Timothy Neary, the drug addict and organist. he and his wife have got the bullet. He's a very fine organist. I spend a lot of time at Westminster Abbey listening to this bloke belting out various tunes. And the wife is alleged to have fiddled the books. 17 and 6 is missing or something, and he's got the bullet, which is very unfair.
Mr. Neary has hired Sherry Booth QC to represent him in his battle against Westminster Abbey, though the leading barrister said she's not promising miracles. That's her husband's job. Scores at the end of round two are Alan and Fred coming back with 6 points, but Francis and Jeremy still in the lead with 10. And we start round three with a letter spotted by John Roberts of Bedfordshire in the Biggleswade Chronicle.
To the Chronicle reader on the Arsley-Biggleswade train on Friday, April the 3rd, who I was in conversation with about her day at the hairdresser's and who unexpectedly burst into tears. You have the most beautiful, wild, glossy, raven-black hair. I did not mean to offend you. As I said, you looked like Kate Bush, not a Bush.
Thanks for that. Francis, why is a course of penicillin just what the doctor shouldn't order?
Well, it's not just penicillin, is it? It's all these pills. People are taking far too many of them and they have side effects, I believe.
They end up with bacteria the size of sparrows.
They keep saying that the doctors are giving them out like Smarties. But doctors don't give out free Smarties, do they? It's a completely spurious simile, that. I mean, it'd be great if they did, if you said, I've got a bit of a sore throat, and they said, do you want some Smarties with the blue ones taken out? Lovely.
Now, you take this for a few days and then you have to be airlifted to Dounreay to be deprocessed or something of the sort.
They're not even that good. Antihistamines are good, because if you have some antihistamines with some cider, they're quite trippy.
A House of Lords report this week revealed that misuse of antibiotics in farming and overprescribing by doctors are creating a new breed of drug-resistant superbugs. The Lords report raised a spectre of unwanted organisms sweeping through medical wards, causing patients untold pain and distress, but warned that nothing could be done to stop Rolf Harris's visits. Experts have revealed that the new types of highly virulent single-celled animals are often carried around the world on passenger planes, but they fail to explain why they always get the seat next to me. Jeremy, here's your piece of music. Jeremy, where will manoeuvres now have to be personoeuvres?
The army, as the song suggests. The army, instead of making it easier for women recruits to do the tests, they're trying to assign people appropriate to the different things that soldiers have to do. Killing, beating up civilians, and cooking. The three different things. And so rather than fixing the test to make it easier for women, they're going to try and find suitable jobs for everybody, regardless of gender. But I think it would be good to get more women in the front line, because wars would just be messed up by women saying, leave a telly, it's not worth it. It'd be great.
Yes, it's the all-new non-sexist army for the 21st century, which was unveiled this week. Women, however, will still be excluded from frontline active service in order to spare them from the horrors which men see there, such as Jim Davidson concerts. Fred, who thinks he's well in the running for that sweet smell of success?
I think this is the inventor And he's come up with an idea that you can inject or spray aerosols into the soles of training shoes to stop them stinking, because he's got three teenage sons and place is just honking. So he's but it's open to abuse because it's not just deodorants that you can spray in. You can spray in any old aerosol. So you have kids abusing it, and you'll see them sniffing trainers to get high, as opposed to just doing it because they're pervy. But the good news is that you could fill them full of helium and do 100 metres in 8 seconds.
Inventor Peter Chan has designed a built-in deodorant system to neutralise the stench of smelly trainers. He claims each shoe will contain enough deodorant for 50 miles of jogging, which will last the average person about 30 years. Alan, whose woolly idea left the rustlers feeling sheepish?
I don't really want to do sheep because Dolly had a baby tonight. As we go to microphone, I don't know which night it is. I mean, it's the night before tomorrow night or the day after. She had a baby called Bonnie. I saw it on television. We should all go off to celebrate. Wet the baby's several heads.
I thought that the whole thing about these cloned sheep was that there would be no babies. That was it. They were infertile.
Well, I'll tell you tonight, Fred, with your bedtime story and your glass of milk, I'll tell you how it happens.
There's going to be a lot of worried shepherds up in Scotland that haven't been using proper contraception with these cloned sheep.
This is the one about sheep rustling. And people rustle sheep. I don't know why, but...
That's when they get fed up rearing cows.
I know. And in order to stop sheep being rustled, you have that sort of thing you get in men's shops where you try to walk out in seven shirts and the thing goes ding. They're fitting these to sheep. And if you're a rustler, as soon as you get in the back of the van, it goes ding, and the police come round.
Didn't you paint them yellow?
He tried that.
No. I used to be a farmer. And it's how you know that the ram has tucked your sheep. Don't you? Fred is nodding.
I know this study.
Fred enjoyed it. It's tremendous. You paint the genitalia of the ram in various colours, and then the next morning you go out and look at the back end of the sheep and see what colour it's gone. You know which ram has tucked it. Very good.
But, Alan, it's not actually the genitals they paint. They put on a thing called the tupping frame, which is just soaked rags. Because I had to tell this story to my daughter, 10-year-old daughter, not so long ago. And I said, look, that sheep's been done by the ram with the green cloths, and that one's been done by the blue. And she said, well, you know, but there's not many red. And I said, well, I agree, obviously there's something wrong with the red ram. And in the corner of the field, there was one ewe with a huge red blotch in her head. And there the lesson ended.
What I want to know is why do farmers need to know which ram's stuck which what's it called if it's a female sheep?
You. No jokes.
<Dang. laughs> Why do they need to know? Is it in case the lamb has a sort of identity crisis in its teenage years?
It's either called you or darling.
Simon Bland, a farmer who was facing bankruptcy due to sheep rustlers, has developed a satellite tracking system for his flock. He admitted he first got the idea of using electronic technology to reveal the precise location of his sheep at all times after watching New Labour spin doctors at work. The location equipment is similar to that used by mountaineers and ramblers, so the next time you see a sheep bumbling around in the rain with a multicoloured cagoule and a bar of mint cake, you'll know it's been fitted. The scores at the end of round three are Alan and Fred with 10, but Francis and Jeremy clinging on to that lead with 14 points. And before we start the final round, here's a piece from the Somerset Hotel's Green Policy Leaflet.
At Glencote House, we all try very hard to look after our environment, and I'd like to inform you of the measures we have taken. We have fitted toilets with lower water capacity. These have dual flush action. Not only that, we use recycled paper wherever possible, and we always use both sides of the paper.
Thanks to Ian Brent Smith and Bista for that one. Francis, your piece of music.
You'll be coming up here.
It's the rabbit warren, isn't
it? It is.
A farmer minding his own business has a rabbit warren, as one does, and suddenly the Department of the Environment sent a hit squad up and listed it. So it's a historic monument. Apparently it's been there since Roman times. And it's now a historic monument, and he's not allowed to build on it. On the other hand, he doesn't have to pay VAT on repairs, I believe.
You don't repair a rabbit warren, do you?
Rabbit warren?
Rabbit warren.
Rabbits do.
Elmer Fudd.
They get in there, they get a load of ceiling roses. They get hold of lots of mouldings and put back the old fireplaces that were taken out in the 70s.
It was a decision by English Heritage to nominate a medieval rabbit warren as a listed monument. Scientists say the warren contains what's left of hundreds of ancient bunnies, rather like Tuesday night over at Hugh Hefner's place. Jeremy, what disposable mountain is just such a waste?
This sort of furs, one presumes, two disposable nappies.
It does.
Which were given to us by God. Because before that, we had to wear terry toweling nappies. Now, most of the audience here, by the looks of them, remember the old wooden ones. But when I was a Ben, you get a thing called a terry toweling nappy, which is a sort of vast eiderdown into which you were nailed, that you might go to the lavatory in that place. And it was sort of taken off when you went to university. And then God decided that we were living in stench and filth and gave us disposable nappies. But now trendy new age parents say, oh, you should use terry toweling. Well, how bored do you have to be with your life to think that it's a good idea to revert to something so barbarous?
Is there enough for it to have been called a European nappy mountain? I reckon what they should do is just accept the fact and build a chairlift up it and go skiing. I'm just going off-piste.
In the past, screaming youngsters wearing ill-fitted pieces of cloth barely held together by numerous safety pins were a common sight in our high streets. What did happen to the Sex Pistols? Fred, who is leaving Luton Airport for a more macho destination?
I'm sorry, I haven't a clue.
Of course you have.
Is it Martin I?
Martin I?
Yes. Martin the First? It's Martini, of course.
Well, nearly.
Cinzano. Campari?
Campari? Campari, yes.
Camper the First is that one. It's Baden-Powell, the first camper, is not going to Luton anymore. Campari are taking their advertising elsewhere, is that right?
That's absolutely right, yes.
Mad Frankie Fraser is the new face of Campari, because they want to toughen it up, because they think it looks a bit of a lady's drink.
He was the dentist for the Richardson gang, wasn't he?
Yeah, but he only tucked up his own kind. He never mucked about with old ladies.
It'll be the new scarred face of Campari, then.
Campari, as many people know, is a popular ingredient in cocktails, but Mad Frankie is thought to have refused an early draft of the script for the ad which had him making a slow, comfortable screw your head to the coffee table. Campari wasn't the most popular 1970s-style mixer in Mad Frankie's circle. They normally preferred concrete. Alan, who snapped after their wedding day, became a bit of a blur.
I've forgotten their names, but I should never forget the picture of them. All the bridesmaids had to get down on their knees, so they looked like dwarfs. And then a banana man, I don't know where he came from, but he was in yellow, he said, I'm a banana man. He appeared between the loving couple.
He'd been attending a conference, the banana man. There was a monster raving loony party conference taking place at the same time, and he was a delegate.
You know too much about this, Francis, for your own good.
I didn't know until I saw the photo that they have annual conferences of the monster raving loony party.
Well, they have them at people's weddings. Yeah. Okay, so a monster raving loony wedding. And the photographer had to pay 2,000 quid compensation because he turned up on these wonderful pictures of people. Could be anybody, but certainly weren't the bride and bridegroom.
I can understand a banana man turning up at your wedding. I mean, that's... But why were the bridesmaids on their knees for the photographs? I mean, that's...
President Clinton was expected. You can't be sure.
They were better than most people's wedding photographs. I thought they were quite inventive and arty. As most wedding photographs, there's these rather unattractive couple in rented gear and some children wearing horrible sort of satin frocks that look like serviettes that have been, you know, folded funny in hotel. And there's always some Burke in a kilt, and you say, you Scotch? He says, no, I'm just a Burke in a kilt.
Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought with them. Francis.
Simon, this is from The Guardian, and it's about the reopening of Darwin's old place, that Down House in Kent, after a massive refit. And it says his study, where he wrote The Origin of the Species, is recreated in detail. His mysterious eternal ailments kept his insides in turmoil. To put it politely, he was exploding at both ends, said Julius Bryant, collections curator for English Heritage. One visitor, Peter Brown, an engineer, was impressed by the table littered with specimens.
Cherubim.
This, Simon, comes from something called The Week, and it's sent in by Jane Phillips of Dundee. And it's about a story from Germany. Herbert Stahl, 46, has been fined for releasing laughing gas during a manic depressive dinner dance in a Munich hotel. I thought the gas would cheer people up, explained Stahl, himself a depressive. But the guests just laughed uproariously while discussing how unhappy they were. Things took a turn for the worse when one man stabbed another for laughing about the death of his mother.
Fred.
This is from the Leighton Buzzard Observer, and earlier this month, the inner wheel in Leighton Buzzard marked the organisation's 50th charter anniversary, and guest speaker was professional artist Beryl Mail. She held the audience enthralled as she showed how easy it is to paint a picture while your buns are in the oven.
Alan.
I have one, Simon, from the East Bucks Advertiser. It says, the editor and publisher of the Advertiser wish to apologise to all our readers for the typographical error in yesterday's edition. The headline of the Leader on page 7 should, of course, have read, Pen is mightier than sword.
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final scores. Alan and Fred have a very creditable 14 points, but Francis and Jeremy have cantered home as this week's winners with 19 points. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Daily Telegraph sent in by Maureen Hedges of London.
Detectives are closing in on a suspected armed robber who staged his first robbery at his local bank in Wingham, New South Wales. The man's disguise was so poor that he was recognised by a clerk who'd been in his class at school. It later emerged he also hired a getaway car in his own name and used his correct driving licence. A spokesman for the police said, "We are confident of an arrest."
That's all for this week. Till next time, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz this week were Francis Wheen, Jeremy Hardy, Fred McCauley and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggart, and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by Tom Jameson with Felix Riley and George Poles. The producer was John Rolfe.